You're now listening to Devo with Uncle Theo. Today is day 112, and we're going to cover 1 Kings chapters 3 and 4. Last time we left off, Solomon was making decisions, but it looked like his decisions lacked wisdom. Most theologians call it the binary problem. He would have two options, do this or this, and he would pick one, but he never had the wisdom to see beyond the possibilities of A and B. And that's why they call it the binary problem. And he needed wisdom to see that there could be a C or a D or E or F. It could be multiple ways to solve a problem. And I kind of line up with this because of what he asked God for and the way he asked it. So chapter 3, verse 1 picks up. Then Solomon formed a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the walls around Jerusalem. The people were still sacrificing on the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. And like we said before, this is politically smart because you would want to make treaties and alliances with neighboring nations. It just strengthens your borders and makes you stronger when you're fighting other nations you don't get sandwiched in. But it's theologically dumb because you should trust in God. God has you sandwiched in for a reason, and it's because you should put your trust in him. But listen to verse 2. It says, the people were still sacrificing on the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. Now Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statues of his father David, except he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God said, ask what you wish me to give you. And if you're looking at the best translation of this, God is saying, ask what I should give you, meaning, what is it that you lack, Solomon? And what do you need to ask me of? What is it that I should give you? What do you really need? I want to see if you get it. If you learn from your father, will you ask of what you know you should have? What did he ask for? Wisdom? Wrong. Not quite. And I know that may ruffle some feathers, but hang in there with me. I'm going somewhere with this. Usually we teach that Solomon asked for wisdom, but that's not the Hebrew word here that he asked for. Now, what he asked for gets to wisdom, but what he asked for in Hebrew is a lev shema. Now, remember the shema from Deuteronomy 6? Hear, O Israel, to listen. And the word lev in Hebrew is heart. So Solomon asked God for a listening heart. Remember what David told him? He said, you need to obey God with all of your heart. You remember Deuteronomy's point? To love the Lord your God with all of your heart. And Solomon says, I get it. I need a listening heart. Because if I have a heart that listens to God, I'll have access to all of the wisdom. Now, this is critical because this is different from wisdom. Wisdom can get you results. Wisdom is knowledge applied, but a listening heart is superior to wisdom because a listening heart causes you to listen to Yahweh and your wisdom flows from God. And because of this wisdom in verse 9, he'll be able to judge your people to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? In verse 10, it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. The Lord said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have asked riches of yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and listening heart. And what would his heart do? Did you pay attention? It says it'll help you discern good and evil. Remember this language from Genesis? What did Satan promise Eve? That she will have the knowledge of good and evil. And this is interesting because God could have gave that all alone. All they had to do was ask. You see it here. They didn't have to disobey God. He could have gifted it to them just like he does here with Solomon. And I find that very interesting, that you could have asked God for this and not Satan. And now, just like David took the Davidic covenant for a test drive, Solomon takes this listening heart for a test drive and uses it and applies it with wisdom. which is why you get the story right after of Solomon judging wisely with the two women and the baby. And we know this story. And there are two women that stood before Solomon. One said, "Oh, my Lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was in the house. It happened on the third day after I gave birth that this woman also gave birth to a child, and they were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, only the two of us in the house. This woman's son died in the night because she laid on it. So she arose in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your maidservant slept, and laid him in her bosom and laid her dead son in my bosom. When I rose in the morning to nurse my son, behold, he was dead. But when I looked at him carefully in the morning, behold, he was not my son whom I had born." Then the other woman said, "No, for the living one is my son and the dead one is your son." But the first woman said, "No, for the dead one is your son and the living one is my son." They both spoke before the king. You see that? A binary. What does Solomon do? Choose this or that. He had been doing that all along. Do I kill Joab or do I keep him alive? Do I kill this one or do I keep him alive? And now he gets it again. And look at what wisdom does. He doesn't have to choose a binary. Then the king said, the one says, "This is my son who is living and your son is the dead one." And the other says, "No, for your son is the dead one and my son is the living one." The king said, "Give me a sword." So they brought a sword before the king. The king said, "Divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other." Then the woman whose child was the living one spoke to the king, for she was deeply stirred over her son, and said, "Oh, my Lord, give her the living child and by no means kill him." But the other said, "He shall neither be mine nor yours. Divide him." Then the king said, "Give the first woman the living child and by no means kill him. She is the mother." When all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had handed down, they feared the king, for they saw the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. He doesn't pick a binary. He uses wisdom to determine who the child's mother truly was. The mother would rather give her child away than to kill and split her child with another woman. So Solomon has a listening heart, and he'll have it until he doesn't. And we'll see what robs him of it very shortly. But let's look at his kingdom first. And as we walk into chapter 4, you get all of the officials' name from verses 1 to 19 that are in Solomon's court. In verse 7, he has 12 deputies over all of Israel who provided for the king and his household. Each man had to provide for a month in a year. And these are their names. And you see that theme of 12 continuing. So Solomon divides the land up in 12 geographical regions, which break down slightly different in how the land was divided amongst the tribes. And we see the power and the wealth and the wisdom of Solomon. They have a ton of food. Listen to their provisions for one day in verse 22. Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour, 60 cores of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 pasture-fed oxen, 100 sheep besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. That's meal for one day. And it's just showing you everything is plentiful. And what is this? It's showing you this is very close to Eden. This is like Eden. It's a microcosm of Genesis 49. This is Genesis 49 in Numbers fulfilled. Look at it. Verse 24. "For he had dominion over everything west of the river." That word dominion, Solomon has it. And look at the end of verse 24. "And he had peace on all sides around about him. So Judah and Israel lived in safety, every man under his vine and fig tree." So you got beautiful organization of nations and food. This is truly called the Golden Ages, because this is as good as it gets. In fact, in verse 20, it even says that Judah and Israel were numerous as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. They were eating and drinking and rejoicing. And that's the what? Remember, the Abrahamic covenant is being fulfilled under Solomon's reign. But we have a problem. Look at verse 26. Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Those deputies provided for King Solomon and all those who came to King Solomon's table. And so we see a big no-no. Solomon is multiplying horses, and the text is giving us a hint that his downfall is coming soon. And so when you think of those triple G's, gold, gals, and giddy-up, Solomon has the giddy-up, he has the horses. We have to look for the gold, and now we have to look for the gals, the women. And we won't go long before we find them all. But right now, we're living in the golden ages. Verse 29 says, "Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is on the seashore." Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. And listen to this, back to Eden in verse 33. "He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish." What does that sound like? It sounds like Genesis 1 and 2, right? "Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom." He's just like Adam. He knows about all plant and animal life, and people are coming all over to hear his wisdom. Like, this is as good as it gets, guys. We grew with David, and it's just multiplied with Solomon. This is the best that Israel will ever be. It's like when we were studying the book of Joshua and how the second generation was so much better than the first that had died off in the wilderness. This is as good as Israel gets. And I'm sad to report the news. After this, it's all downhill. It's a downward spiral from here. So let's appreciate what we see in Solomon. But sadly, we're starting to see cracks in his character. He's married a woman from Egypt. He's multiplying horses. And we're about to see before long, he'll multiply more women and he'll start building his house right in the middle of building God's temple. And that's going to be bad news. And let's continue to study together. We'll catch that next time.